right, we're just going to jump right into the book this evening. And we'll leave the question of whether the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad are Jews or Christians or Gentiles or what they are to another time. So let's just jump right into the first verse or second verse that says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials." Now, one of the interesting books that came out many, many years ago now was called Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And is there a little bit of a confusion in the minds of some people when terrible tragedies occur to people who are otherwise good people? They've lived a good life. Maybe they're even a faithful servant of God. And people start to wonder about that. Virgil?
Yeah, a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but there's times when bad things happen to people. They don't understand happenstance for one thing. Another thing, they blame God for whatever has happened to them. That God is in control. Why does he allow this to happen to me?
Right. Yeah, and that's a fairly common question. Why are bad things happening to me if I'm a faithful servant of God? Is God trying to tell me something? Well, James just leaps over all of that. James just says, no matter what your trial is, how should you feel about it?
Joyful.
You should be joyful. And so he creates, I would say, a pretty serious paradox here, because he takes a word, joy, and if you look at the definition of that word, it's right at the top of page 7 there. It means gladness, delight, the cause or occasion of joy. Now, generally speaking, if I say, I want you to come over tonight and rejoice with me, what would you expect had happened?
Something good.
Okay, something good, right? And you get over there and you find out that I've just been told I have terminal cancer. Are you going to think there's something wrong with me?
Definitely.
Okay, but what does this verse say?
Count it joy.
Count it all joy and delight when you fall into these various kinds of trials. Now, that's going to take some serious, serious thinking on our part. Matter of fact, the way he puts it in the Greek, I've got it in that very first paragraph, all joy considering my brethren. That's how the book starts, all joy considering. Now, if you start all joy, and the word all in the Greek language means of every class, of every kind, of every joyous thing that you could imagine. And so I want you to take all of that, and then boom, all joy for what? For various trials, like what happened to Job. Did Job consider it all joy when he went through his tribulations? Well, of course, that command wasn't there yet. And the reasoning behind it wasn't there yet. But the let me read this third paragraph here under the Greek word kara there, joy, delight. It says, every form and quality of joy, gladness, and delight would generally be reserved only for the best days of our life, days filled with blessings and prosperity and good news. For these same emotions to be generated and directed toward every kind of trial is going to take some serious rethinking. The paradox of seeing bad things as good and feeling the same joy toward them is going to need some powerful reasons and motivations. And so that's kind of the question. And I was kind of left this morning. Actually, I started this class yesterday. I'm back to it taking almost all day to go through one verse. So that's how I used to study, and I'm kind of back to that right now because I haven't studied James in a long time. But what we have here is we have a situation where every bad thing that enters our life, is that a trial? Is that what a trial would be when something bad happens? Yeah, well, we'll get to the definition in a moment, but just for right now, take my word for it that the word trial means what happened to Job. One day, Job lost what?
Everything.
Everything, all his possessions, all of his family, everything. And then a few months or years later, what else did he lose?
His health.
He lost his health, he lost his reputation, he lost his repose. He said, I can't sleep at night. Just my wife's turned against me. All my family have turned against me. All my friends have turned against me. I have nothing. And those are trials. And so when James says, I need to come up with a way, and I really appreciated, I found this definition this afternoon, or excuse me, this morning as I was looking through this. And I want to go through it a little bit with you. It's the Greek word, well, I won't read that word for you, but it's that fourth, fifth paragraph there, to consider, deem, account, or think. Now, there's four synonyms for thinking in the New Testament, and this man kind of gives it. This particular word denotes a belief resting not on inner feelings or sentiment, but on the due consideration of external grounds, the weighing and comparing of facts. Now, so does the Christian just have to paint everything in beautiful pictures and have this sentiment that everything is good? Is that what this word gives us the right to think? No, no, this is a word that has to do with, let me read the next point, which is the third line before this definition ends. Hegeomai denotes a more deliberate and careful judgment, more than a subjective that is based on feelings rather than thoughts. So this is a reasoning. When James says consider, he means I want you to work through your teachings in the scriptures until you can see the reasons why you should feel joy and happiness when you fall into trials. Now, I don't know about you, but that's pretty shocking. How many of us are doing that? How many of us can actually say when something bad happens? Now, I've made this point before in Philippians chapter 4. You remember where it says, in nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God will guard your hearts and your thoughts. That doesn't mean if I get a phone call in the middle of the night that somebody's been in a terrible car crash and they don't know if they're going to make it or not, and they're in surgery and they're in critical condition, oh well, who cares? Is that what we would do?
No,
you're going to have that initial jolt of anxiety. Anxiety is the normal response when something bad happens, because that's what motivates us to do what?
Pray.
And be concerned and do whatever needs to be done. It's the natural consequence of love is this anxiety. But after I've prayed and after it's in God's hands, now what do I do? Do I continue to be anxious? No, now it's time to let it go. I've done everything I can do, and it's in God's hands. Is that good enough for us? It's in God's capable hands. If God determines that they're going to pass away or their injuries are too bad that they can't be saved and he's not going to intervene or act, can I deal with that? Am I going to have to deal with that? Well, so at what point? Well, it's going to take me 6 years to work my way through it, or it's going to take me 6 minutes to work my way through it. It just depends on the spiritual maturity that we have. And I think the same thing is true here. I don't think when you get the phone call that someone has died, or when you get the phone call that you've lost your money, or that you've had some terrible health issue, or something else has occurred in your family, and you get that initial call, are we rejoicing at that point? No. But if we continue to not rejoice, at some point, what is this verse going to do? Going to condemn us, right? This is a command. This is not a suggestion. He uses the command mode to when he says, consider it all joy. So look at the reasons, come up with the answers, and so when troubles come, I've got to think this through. And I've got to come up with reasons why I can see this as a joyous thing. Now, at the bottom of page 7, what I've done is I've put the passages that have to do with persecution, because I've always been very, emotionally aware of the pain involved here. In verse 11 there at the very bottom, blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad. Is that easy to do? When your parents, remember Jesus said that foes will be in your own household, that your persecutions will be from your mother, your father, your wife, your husband, your children, your best friends. You don't know who you're going to lose. And when he goes on to say in that next verse in Luke, when they exclude you and revile you and cast out your name as evil. Now, are those joyous things? No. But what does Jesus say in verse 23? Not just rejoice, but leap for joy. Is that easy? No. So you see, we're dealing with a magnitude here, a component that Again, I think our problem is, and I'll get to this a little bit later, but just to deal with it right now, after we become a Christian, what is this life? What did Jesus say about this life in the Sermon on the Mount regarding what we should eat or what we should put on or our possessions?
It's not as important.
They don't matter. What matters? Seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness and everything else. Everything else is just, it's just there. It doesn't matter anymore to the Christian unless he's covetous, unless there's just too much hold of this life. Now, there's nothing wrong with being rich, but he says those who are mindful to be rich, now you're in a snare and many foolish and hurtful lusts that drown men in destruction. Now, how do I know whether I'm enjoying my wealth or whether I'm clinging to my wealth? Well, when something bad happens and I can't rejoice, what's that telling me? Now, again, not the minute that it happens, but 6 months later, I'm still just groveling this and I'm just agonizing. Why did you do this to me, God? And there's no joy, there's no happiness, there's no acceptance. What's that telling me? Am I spiritually mature? No, there's something seriously wrong with my faith if I can't let that go. What about that rich young ruler? What did Jesus say to him? If you want to follow me, you sell all that you have, give it to the poor, and come after me. What an offer. What an opportunity that this man was given. I don't know if he was offering him an apostleship, but he was certainly offering him an opportunity to become a part of his inner work. What did he do? He went away sorrowful. He couldn't let it go. And that's when Jesus says, it's harder for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So I think, and we'll see this in Paul a little bit later, but I think that basically trials and tribulations help us to let go. Help us to let go. Matter of fact, I've been going through the book of Ecclesiastes with Prince over the last couple weeks, and I've been amazed, going through it quickly like we are, how clear God made it in the book of Ecclesiastes that as far as this life is concerned, how does he sum it up? Vanity?
Vanity, vanity.
All is vanity. And there's, you don't know, he says it happens, some things happen to the just as if they were the unjust, and other things happen to the unjust as if it was the just. And he said there's no fairness, there's adversity, there's oppression, there's trials, there's troubles, there's situations that arise where it's just so unfair that you can't even imagine it. And what does he finally say? In the day of adversity, consider. In other words, this life, brethren, has been cursed by sin. And God's intent in this life now is not that as Christians might have the most enjoyable life here, but that he can save as many people as possible. And sometimes my having an enjoyable life and him saving as many people as possible, can they both be done? So in the first century, why did God allow the church to be persecuted like that? Was that fair?
And spread the gospel.
Okay. If there was a need, he had to make a choice, as many people as possible being saved, or let's protect these people and not let them have to go through these kinds of tribulations. So let's modify the gospel. We don't want it preached so strongly that it's going to bring persecution. Well, what good's that going to do? So this is part of what we have to factor in. Again, remember the Greek word for this considering means looking at the logical spiritual reasons why we should be looking at it like this. And one of the reasons why is that this life for the Christian is throwaway. This life is not important. As far as God is concerned, our joy and happiness in this life, 2 Peter chapter 3, God is not slack concerning his promises, but what is he?
Long-suffering,
not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance. If I have to live a life of misery so one person can have their soul saved, what's the difference between that and what Jesus did? Can I live a life of misery in order for one soul to be saved? Well, that's really what we're dealing with here. George?
Well, we need to keep in mind, as it says in other places, that we don't have any trials and tribulations, we'll be absolutely worthless, to put it in my words. Just like the athlete, if they never have any trials as they practice for their sport, or don't push themselves or anything like that, or they never get to a sprained ankle or whatever, they're not going to learn to overcome. And the Christian, same way. We don't have these trials, we're not going to learn to overcome.
Well, and that's exactly right. That's what these things do, and that's what he's going to get to in the next verse, which hopefully we'll get to tonight. I'm not sure if we will or not, but knowing that the proving of your faith creates perseverance or endurance. So now we get into another aspect of this, and that is that it is testing our faith. And so that kind of brings us to, let's go ahead and turn now to the top of page 8, and let's talk about this word trial, because this is a big word. And it is the same word that was used of Jesus being tempted by the devil. It is the same word that is used of God testing Abraham. And it is the same word that is used here for these tests that we go through, that we just happen into. Now, let me look at that definition before we come back up here. Okay, the paragraph that begins, here it is confined to these events. Okay, that's like the fifth paragraph down. Let me look at that definition, because this is a very important word. The main sense of peripipto is to come on something accidentally, to be innocently involved in something, commonly with mishaps. So when these trials, now in chapter 12, he's going to talk about temptations and trials that we fall into because we were tempted, we were enticed by our own lust. Did we fall into that, or did we seek it out? See, that's not a falling into, that's not an accidental thing at all. So when he uses, even though he uses the same word here as he will use later in the book to talk about temptation and sin, that's not what he's dealing with here, because these are things that came upon you accidentally. It's not something that you brought on yourself by your own decisions, but something that happened as a result of what God calls in that next verse there, a return to Saul under the sun, that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But what happens to all?
Time and chance.
What does time and chance mean?
Be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay, that's another way of putting it. It means that there's things happening in the world all the time, and if you happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, they're going to happen to you, right? And was there any, in God's mind, was God saying, I'm going to make sure that he's there at this time so that'll happen to him? No, this verse precludes that. Now, those kinds of things can happen, but his point is, God's not behind everything that goes on in the world today. God's content to allow the world to unfold the way it's going to unfold, and he only intervenes in it when there's a reason. And that's why I've told you in the past, if you want God providentially working with you, what had you better do? Well, you better be a person that he can work with. If he can see, no matter what I do for you, you're not going to change, and it's not going to be helpful, then what's the point of getting involved in our lives? And there's multitudes of people out there right now in the world today that God can't do anything for. They don't care. And we learn from the initial, when God saw that was happening after the ancient world was destroyed at the Tower of Babel, what did he decide to do? He gave them up. Well, what does give them up mean? It means you just leave them to time and chance. Most people, that's how they're going to live. And they can offer prayers to God, but if God can see that no matter what I do for this person, it's not going to make any difference, then what should he do? And what he teaches us is, I don't do anything. There's situations that arise where that's just how it's going to be. George?
Well, we need to remember as Christians that yes, time and chance happens, but the scriptures also show us that we can avoid time and chance if we use a little bit of good judgment. For instance, just to pick an example, it would be kind of stupid for any of us to go down and downtown along Colfax Avenue at 2 o'clock in the morning. And and then say, well, it was God's fault when we got robbed or beat up or whatever might well happen, because those things are going on in that time of the morning in certain areas.
Well, that's true. There's wisdom. Wisdom helps. Wisdom is a defense, Ecclesiastes writer puts it to us. But always?
No.
Does every wise person avoid these things?
No.
No. Sometimes things just happen. And so there's things that we fall into. For example, my next Bible class with somebody, maybe I get a class with somebody and it turns out that they hate Christians and their goal is to destroy the first person who tries to teach them the gospel. Is it my fault that I picked that person? No. If I die as a result of that, can Jeannie count it all joy? Well, but that's the idea here. That's the idea here. You know, you get on an airplane. Is that airplane going to make it? I never know. I pray it'll make it. But do they all make it? No, they don't all make it. And if they fall, if it goes down, well, then we will have to learn how to count it all joy. You know, that's another thing that the Ecclesiastes writer points out. Better is the day of your death than the day of your birth. That take work that one through. It's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting, because that's the end of all men. So anyway, we're dealing with some principles here of a very large magnitude. And so it doesn't really matter why they come. But again, these are not things that I've brought on myself, and these are not things that the devil has brought on me to destroy me. These are things that just happened. So Paul talks about these. There's several verses there at the bottom of page 8, and I just want to kind of hit a couple of the points. Let's just look at the darkened, the bolded ports, where it says, "We also glory in tribulations." Now, when something really good happens to me, as a result of my hard work, I feel a sense of pride and I kind of like to brag a little bit. Is there anything wrong with that? Anything wrong with feeling self-esteem and glorying in something good happening to you that you worked hard to get? But see, this is just the opposite. Paul is saying, I glory in what?
Trials.
Tribulations and trials. The term tribulation, of course, means you're trying to get through a place, but it's narrowed down so far that you can't get through it. There's no way out. And so Paul said that I feel a sense of self-esteem in my tribulation. So what one person would feel if something really good happened to them, Paul feels if something really bad happens to them. And then and I'm going to deal with this verse more later, so I won't deal more with that. But in Philippians 4, it says, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Does it sound like Paul's figured out what James is commanding? Mm-hmm. Count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials. I've learned to be content in whatever state I am. Then, this passage in 2 Corinthians, after Paul receives that thorn in the flesh, Jesus says to him in verse 9, my grace is sufficient, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Verse 10 then, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, reproaches, needs, persecutions, distresses, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Now that's all James is getting at here. James is just getting at, if you can add up all the reasons and you can see that this is what this is accomplishing, it's making you humble, it's strengthening you. It's helping you to let go of the things in this life. It is a blessing. Jesus' power is made perfect in these kinds of weaknesses. The cares of the world, the desires for other things that are choking the word. When we hit a trial, what happens to those things? Even if they were starting to get a hold of us, what happens when we get hit hard with something? You shake your head and you say, wait a minute, I'm going in the wrong direction here. This shouldn't be bothering me this much. Then this passage at the very bottom of page 8. For our light affliction, verse 17, our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. Now, let's face it. Does old age bring trials? Things you didn't expect? Health issues? Problems that arise? For some of us, we can accept them with contentment and joy and just recognize, but I'll tell you, it takes some thinking to do that. because we're not used to it. Now, we know it's coming. Is Ecclesiastes pretty clear? The dark days are going to come when you're going to lose one by one all of your abilities. But we don't want those dark days to come till we're about, what, 98 or 99? But it doesn't always work that way. And so, again, these passages are crucial because, as I say, this word consider means adding up the reasons. And sometimes we can't have joy because we can't add up the reasons because we haven't delved into it this deeply. We haven't really looked at these verses. And I would highly recommend, if any of you are really struggling with being able to finally reach a point of contentment in regard to these trials and tribulations and troubles that you're dealing with, that you take a look at these verses and try to find the hinge. Try to find the point. There's a problem here. If I can't do what God asked me to do, then there has to be a reason in my head that shouldn't be there. Now, what is it? And so now I've got to start playing Sherlock Holmes. I've got to start digging through the scriptures, because you can't leave this stuff sit. Because if the devil can see that these trials could take me out, what's going to happen sooner or later? What happened with Job? Satan was intent. God said, do whatever you want. Is he pretty effective?
Very.
Terrible, the way that goes about. All right. Any thoughts up to this point in the class? Okay, then let's jump over to page 9. Let me just read part of this first paragraph at the top of page 9. All forms of adversity and tribulation are under consideration. Anything that we fall into that causes sorrow and loss can, and I should have put, should be viewed in this light. When we fall into adversity, we're given an opportunity to prove what we're made of. This requires great faith and trust in God to view things in this manner. It is a great leap of maturity when we can do so. And consider this carefully next time we're in a grievous circumstance and we have to decide how we're going to react. Because that's what this is dealing with. And it shows something. Now, let me read that next paragraph. Regardless of our previous understanding of trials and difficulties, we must be transformed and learn how to accomplish it. So that passage in Romans, that's what he deals with. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. What exactly does he mean by being transformed by renewing your mind? Does new information cause us to see things differently sometimes?
Yeah.
Well, it always will. Because if I'm heading in the wrong direction and new information comes to me, then what am I going to do? I'm going to turn around because I'm going the wrong way. And the same thing is true here. If I'm seeing that all of the trials and tribulations in my life right now are not bringing joy, then there's something wrong that I need to start digging into and try to figure out why. There's something wrong here. All joy consider, my brethren, when you fall into various trials. Because these trials are testing our faith. And because they're testing our faith, we need to feel the appropriate response. Otherwise, the test of our I just gave you the answer. I was going to ask the question here. The test of our faith is what? A failure. It didn't work. If it leaves me weaker, if it leaves me more disgruntled and more angry and more frustrated with God or more tied to this world, then that was a failure. And did Job come pretty close to running into some problems when his three friends got there? He held fast to his integrity, but at a certain point, remember what he said? He said, the Lord gave, Lord take away,
blessed
be the name of the Lord. Naked I came, naked I'm coming back. So if you look at it like that, what difference does it make? But we can't look at it. Because we're so tied up in it. Because it's important to us. It's where our self-esteem is. It's where our comforts are. It's where our sense of the future. You know, we like to say that we're not using any of our material possessions for our security. We're just trusting in God. But
yeah.
It's pretty tough to do that when you've got Social Security and all these insurances and all this money coming in saying, you know, I'm relying totally on the Lord. Well, maybe we are, but if we ever lost all that, what would we find out in a hurry?
Whether or not we're
we'd find out whether we really could pray, give us this day our daily bread. So, you know, I forgot to deal with one point. Let's go back to page 8. And right in the very middle, just above the first verse there, there's a definition here I wanted to read. This is the kind of trials that we're looking at. They're many-colored, spotted, mottled, pied, dappled, of leopards, of fawns, metaphorically, number 3 there, Roman numeral 3, changeful, various, diversified, manifold. All right, so when the book of Luke opens and Matthew opens, Jesus is healing these various diseases. What kind of diseases are we talking about?
All different kinds.
Well, whatever there is. Leprosy, lame, blind, just anything you could imagine, death, Jesus is able. And was there anything he couldn't heal? So various diseases means every kind that there could possibly be. So when, and then the same word is used, but a preposition is put in front of it to make it even stronger. But this is the word that's in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, that says that the church reveals the manifold wisdom of God to the angelic hosts in heavenly places. So you can see every type, every form of God's wisdom in the church. You can see his compassion wisdom, his justice wisdom, his wisdom. I mean, as you go through the book of Romans, you see God's wisdom. Finally, in chapter 11, 33, what does Paul say? Oh, the depth of the wisdom of God. And so he says it's all here. So this is the word for every kind of trial. You can't really say, well, this isn't involved there. No, every color, every hue, every shape, every change, variety, diversification, manifold, everything. So there just isn't a trial that isn't being dealt with here. So don't think in your mind, well, he wasn't talking about this one. He was talking about persecutions. He was talking about the loss of possessions, the loss of health, the loss of whatever trial, whatever we fall into unexpectedly that takes our breath away. Paul talks about all the terrible things that happened to him. We look at Jesus, who was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and yet for the joy before him was able to endure the cross. And I think that's very instructive, because when Jesus is praying in the garden, is there a smile on his face? Is he just saying, oh, I can't wait for this to happen, this is so great? No, he's praying, he's got strong cries, and yet when he gets through the initial, what does he come to? Who for the joy that was set before him. At a certain point, Jesus set his mind and he said, I'm not going to think about this anymore. That's why Paul says in Philippians, I'm set for the defense of the gospel. There's nothing to think about anymore. It's already been, I've gone through everything and I've thought it through. This is my life. This is my conviction. And so we've got to learn how to do that. And I think verse 3 gives us the key to how we do that, and that is by that word knowing. Now, this is a present active participle, which means this is something going on in my mind all the time. I'm always remembering this, that trials test faith. So whenever something bad happens, what's my first thought? This is a test. This is only a test. How am I going to get through it? Am I going to end up with joy? Am I going to end up with bitterness? Am I going to end up with war? How am I going to get through this? And of course, one of the nice things about going through trials is that you learn from it. And hopefully you don't make the same mistake twice. So when you get smacked in the head, realizing I've got too much in this world right now because this is hurting too much. There's something not right here. My thinking is not clear. I came in naked. I'm going out that way. What do these things matter? But it's hard to think like that, especially in our culture. And so, as I say, this is a good wake-up call for us if we are not looking at things in the proper perspective. And I guess the reason I'm emphasizing this is because I was surprised at how much, you know, in my 20s, I already knew all this, I thought. But now I'm looking at it again, and I'm going, wow, it's amazing how much of this you need to reevaluate and you need to get back in your head. Because it was there, but through the years, what happens? I mean, is it easy to go back to the old ways? You know, you got that old pair of shoes, really comfortable, and sometimes you just go back into that. And so this is critical. And so I'm spending so much time on this, not because you need it, but because I know I need it. And 99 times out of 100, if I need it, there may be a few other people here, or maybe all of you do. Virgil?
There's another aspect of this. The Christian should be the happiest people on the top side of this earth, because we're taught things like this on how to deal with problems in life, what life is all about, and what is important and what isn't. But if we don't practice that, and especially as we pass through this life and the older that we get, whether we realize it or not, we have an audience that's watching and looking.
Right.
And what we do and how we can conduct our life. And if we go through life with a long face and growl at everything that comes up, and nothing's right, and, you know, there's a lot of adversities that come, but there's nothing wrong with smiling and say, this is, you know, we'll work through this. It's
right.
Okay.
Well, and it certainly is a powerful testimony to our faith if we do that. And you remember when David was fasting for his son, and then when his son died, what did his servant say?
Uh-oh.
We better not tell him. Look what he was doing before he died. Now what's he going to do? Well, what does he do after he finds out the son's dead?
Goes and eats.
He washes his face, he goes and eats, and they say, we don't understand. And David says, while he was still alive, I was praying to God. But now that he's dead, I'm going to go to him, but he's not going to come back to me, so let's just move on. There's no more reason to be upset. God said no. And so for David, now that was a very powerful test or a very powerful proof of his faith. And so, again, this is just something we're all going to have to wrestle with, and probably have to wrestle with it again in another 10 years because, as I say, the culture we live in tends to sap that away because we have so much, and it's really hard to just rely on God. And sometimes we don't have enough trials. And if you don't have enough trials, then what happens? You get out of practice, right? You begin to atrophy, is what we call it. All right, well, I think we better stop. Jason's been sitting back there a long time, and nobody's coming up. So, all right, we'll pick up with verse 3 next week. And as you can see, we covered one verse tonight. But we'll go a lot quicker than that. But there's going to be a few like that. I think we spent our time very wisely because this is, I think, a serious, serious thing for all of us to consider. All right, thank you.